everyone. My name is Corinne, and I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic.
Oh, Corinne.
Thank you for asking me to share here tonight, and congratulations and happy anniversary. 50 years. That's awesome. I came to a meeting just a few weeks ago, and I was blown away at the beginner's meeting. So much recovery, talking about the solution, and I love coming to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and hearing about the solution of not just the problem, because we all know how we got there, but it was really awesome. So it's an honor and a privilege to be here. It's an honor and privilege to be to service to AA and to God. AA not only saved my life, but it gave me a life worth saving. And, you know, I experienced strength and hope. I don't really talk too much about my drunkalog, just because I don't feel that it's going to help anyone stay sober today. You know, I did probably what most good alcoholics did. You know, there's been a lot of pain, not just for myself, but the pain that I inflicted on the people that were around me. And I grew up in Worcester. And I don't know where, like, I think I picked up my first drink when I was, like, 13, and I think it was weed first that I picked up, and then that led to other things. And by the time I was 18, I graduated high school married and pregnant as a clear result of a keg party. And, you know, it just kind of took off from there. And my life really revolved around drinking. It was what I was doing. It was what my friends were doing. It was, it happened to be, something that I kind of grew up around. Not that there was alcoholism in my home, but my father loved to drink and loved to party, and we had a built-in pool, and that meant the blend that came out about May, and you know, we'd replace it 3 or 4 times during that summer season, and then we'd put it away after Labor Day. And so I was brought up like that, but they were managing their lives. You know, my mother never drank a drop of alcohol. She grew up in an alcoholic home. The disease of alcoholism, as I know today, is a family disease. And, I come from a long, long line of alcoholics, I am only one out of that whole line that lives as a recovered alcoholic today. They died from the disease of alcoholism. They still live with the disease of alcoholism. But no one's made it through the halls yet except for me. And my grandmother, I always touch on this because it's so important to me today. My maternal grandmother, Mary, was completely ousted from our family. My grandfather was a patriarch Italian, and whatever he said went. And when she was drinking, she did all these kinds of terribly tragic things. And, you know, so they pretty much ousted her, and he said that no one was to have communication and no one was to talk to her. And that's exactly what they did. So she grew up, you know, not knowing her children, as her children had children. So none of her grandchildren knew who she was. But I always used to ask about her all the time, because my mother used to tell me that she died, and that's all I would hear. And then one day when I was 12 years old, the phone rang, and it was my grandmother. And the disbelief and the shock that I felt at that time, because I always felt like I should have a choice. And she'd say to me, she's not a nice woman, and someday you'll understand. Someday you'll understand. And, that day did come. I do have an understanding today. She was an alcoholic who suffered from the disease of alcoholism. And, her disease was so unforgivable to what happened that she died alone. Died alone without the love and support of her family. And as strange as it may be that I never met this woman, I've always felt connected to her in some way. And at the end of my drinking, I was her, alone, desperate, and scared. I had 4 beautiful children that I started having at 18. I spent the 80s pregnant, basically. And I had these 4 beautiful children. I have 3 girls, and I have a son. And at the end, nobody was in my life. pretty much everyone had disowned me. At the end of my drink, and I know this is Alcoholics Anonymous, but it's part of my story, and not only was I an alcoholic, but I was a full-blown crack addict. And every character defect that went along with that, I had. Everything. I was a liar. I was a cheat. I was a thief. I couldn't differentiate the truth from the false. I was living, one might say, to drink. That's what I was doing. So my family, when they disowned me, they didn't disown me because they didn't love me. They disowned me because they did love me. And I remember that feeling at the end when, you know, all alone, it was Christmas. And Christmas was always such an important holiday for me. I had four kids, which means, like, you know, we'd have to start shopping and preparing and getting ready. And through the months of October and November and Christmas, there was three of their birthdays. We had Thanksgiving. We had Christmas. And then New Year's was always my holiday. But at the end, it was the last Christmas. It was December 25th of 2005. And I was sitting alone in this place that I called home, which was, which never saw the light of day. The shades would be drawn, and it was dark, just dark, dark, dark. And the only people that were around me were doing what I was doing. And I remember feeling this loneliness and this despair in my heart. And at this point, I still thought it was them. I still thought it was them. Don't they know who I am? You know, how could they do this to me? It was pathetic, is what it was. It was pathetic, and I continued on for three more weeks after that particular time, and I thought that I could put everything down. I really didn't think I had a problem. Everyone else knew I had a problem. You know when everyone's talking, but you don't know what they're saying. You know they're saying something, but you're not sure what they're saying. But that's how I felt. I felt on the outside, even in the place that I was most comfortable, on the bar stool. But you can't socially smoke crack. You can't go out to the bar room and do it. So it kept me isolated. And that's just the way my disease worked. It's just the way that my disease worked. And, you know, there was a series of events that started happening in my life. And, you know, for a long, long time, drinking and drugging was my solution to life. It wasn't my problem. It was my solution. It was for good times and bad times and happy times and sad times. And whatever was going on in my life, it was always an excuse. Well, it's Tuesday, you know, you know, I'm going to go out for a pizza after work because I deserve that pizza after work. You know, and I'd go out and I'd get the pizza all right, but I wouldn't show up back home till Monday. You know, why would I do that? Why would I leave my four beautiful children at home? I never understood it. There was so much shame and remorse and guilt. And, you know, the drinking and the drugging just stuffed down those feelings as we know today, you know. The longer I stay here in Alcoholics Anonymous, the more I become aware and intimate with my disease. Because just because I'm here and I put the drink and the drug down doesn't mean that I don't suffer from all those other isms that go on. I know today that alcohol wants me dead whether I drink it or not. It doesn't care about people. It doesn't care about jobs. It doesn't care about feelings. It doesn't care. You know, it hemmed by the throat for quite some time. I should mention too, you know, my sobriety date is February 1st of 2006. And I have a home group. It's There Is a Solution. We meet on Saturday nights at the corner of Nielsen and Main Street at the Lutheran Church. I have co-sponsors today. I also attend weekly meetings. So I'm doing all the basics. I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm doing what they're telling me that I need to be doing. And when I first started to come around, I was at the Edwina Martin House in Brockton. And I remember walking in there full of fear. Of course, I'm full of fear. I walk in the door, and there's 20 other women sitting in this room. And I'm like, oh, my God, how did I end up here? How did I end up here? I don't even know. I always see they talk about this invisible line that we cross over, an invisible line. I don't know where I went from controlling and enjoying to it having me by the throat, but it happened. It definitely happened. My family, I had a hysterectomy when I was 40. And I had a pretty good life up to that time. I was, making a living and was being successful in some of these things. God continually gave me gifts in different areas, and I just wasted them all. But when I was 40, I had a hysterectomy. And a lot of my family, my mother especially, say that my uterus was attached to my brain. And when they took that, my brain went with it. And to some extent, it kind of is, about the time that I really started to spiral down to my bottom. When I got into the Edwina Martin House, and at this point, that 20-year marriage was dissolved. My parents weren't speaking with me. And my children weren't speaking with me. It tells me in the ninth step that there's a long road of reconstruction ahead, a long road. It talks about, and there is a solution, that there goes the annihilation of all things worthwhile in life. It engulfs the lives of those who touch the sufferers. Engulfs. That's what I did. I engulfed. I also like to say that, I had stickability. I definitely had stick-to-itiveness. I would stick to you like a bloodthirsty leech and suck the life right out of you. Spiritually, mentally, emotionally, physically, financially. And then I just move on to the next one. I got to the Edwina Martin House, and I was pretty much a broken woman. I was at my second meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and there was a woman at the podium, and I love to say the story because she's actually here tonight too. And she was standing at the podium. It was the POP meeting over on North Main Street, and she was up at the podium, and her arms were flaring, and she was going and going. She's like, "I'm the Tasmanian devil with fire coming out of my ass." And I'm like, "Holy shit. If this girl can get sober, I can get sober too." But it's the first time that I actually connected with someone. She was kind of telling my story. She had some of the same things that I was doing. I was feeling. She was at the Edwina Martin House before I got there. And that was the first real connection, strange, but she continued to be in my life after that through a different series of events. But I was at my third meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I met my Big Book Step Study sponsor. And I was a little over 2 months sober because I had to be in a holding for a while. And I met my Big Book Step Study sponsor, and I remember he said to me, he said, "Well, if you're serious about this, you go home, you read the doctor's opinion, you highlight anything that sticks out to you, and then you give me a call when you're done." So I went home to the Edwina Martin House, opened up the Big Book, read it 3 times, highlighted in 3 different colors, and called him the very next morning. And that was it. That's where it started. That's absolutely where it started. He sat down with me, kitchen table AA, one-on-one. The way it was laid out. I don't stand here with any special knowledge of what makes one's life meaningful. I know of no magic, but I do know, beyond knowing, that the outline that was laid out before us in the basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous, so fondly known as the Big Book, the promises can come true in your life. They came true in my life. He sat down with me. He had known of his own spiritual awakening and his own spiritual experience. And he sat down, and we launched into action. He opened up the doctor's opinion and started reading this stuff to me. And all of a sudden, it started making sense. That's why I'd go out on a Friday and not go home till Monday. That's why. Not that I was a terrible mother, because I suffer from the disease of alcoholism. I suffer from a threefold disease, spiritual, mental, and physical. Spiritually, those values and those morals that I grew up with were so far gone, I couldn't even tell you what they were. Physically, I was beat. Physically. And it says to us that any time that we leave out the physical factor in an alcoholic, is wrong. We need to look at this, and it needs to be treated on a daily basis. The 3 pieces to it. But all of a sudden, he started reading this, and things started opening up. Now, I got through the first 3 steps, which for me are relationship-building steps. Not only was I building a relationship and a friendship with the person who sat down with me, but I was also trying to build a relationship with this higher power that everyone was talking about here. I certainly didn't think that God was going to help me. Because if you'd know what I did, and if you saw where I'd been, He certainly wasn't going to help me. I got to the fourth step, and it says in the fourth step that it's a fearless and thorough moral inventory. Not a fearful inventory, a fearless and thorough. And I sat down and I wrote out all the stuff that I would never tell anybody about, that I would take this stuff with me. And I wrote it down, and I shared it in the fifth step. And the feeling that I felt at that time was absolutely amazing. The freedom, you know. I know today, 3.5 years later, that I barely scratched the surface. I also suffer from the disease of denial. I don't know what I don't know. I don't know what I don't know. And at the time that I wrote it, it was as thorough and fearless as I could be. More stuff is constantly revealed to me. And every time I get one thing figured out, something else rears its ugly little head. Because that's just the way life is, you know? I feel it's part of my recovery today is to bring the light of recovery to my family. You know? It's about walking and working this in all of my affairs. And that to me just means I take God with me wherever I go. Wherever I go, I take Him with me. That's practicing this in all my affairs. I don't step over God in my own kitchen. My sponsors taught me so many things, so many things. One of them is your mouth matching your feet. If you're standing up here at a podium of Alcoholics Anonymous and you're talking out this stuff, are you actually doing it? Are your feet matching it? Another thing she taught me is, she talks about this, what she calls the love walk. The love walk. And if you don't know what the love walk is, open up the Bible, Corinthians 13. It'll tell you all about the love walk. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love is long-suffering. Love believes the best about people. Love isn't flipping someone a bird when they cut me off on the street. It's not what it's about. You know, those are the things I used to do. I remember this one story. We used to have this hill that used to go up to the house where I used to live in Worcester, and it would go from two lanes to one lane. And everyone would always try to beat out the person, you know. They wanted to be first. And sure enough, this poor woman who just happened to cross my path beat me out. And I chased her all the way into Holden. I got out of the car, and she's like, "Where'd you get your license, Bags?" And her window was rolled down, and all I did was punched her right through the window. Punched her. I said, "How do you like that? That's Bags for you." Jump back in my car, drive home like nothing. Like nothing. Talking about being angry, you know? So many things, you know. One of my favorite drinks was tequila. I loved tequila, but tequila didn't love me. Didn't love me. You know, there was barroom fights. You know, either me pulling someone off the back of a bar stool or me being pulled off by the back of the bar stool, you know? This is a 40-year-old woman. A 40-year-old woman. I'm beating up people on Lincoln Street in Worcester. And I thought it was normal. I literally thought that was normal. It's crazy. When I look back and see it, like some of the instances, you know, I had totaled a car the February before I got into recovery. And there wasn't a spot on my car that didn't have a dent or a scratch or a smashed up. The windows were out. Everything was gone. I had three other people in the car with me. One of my friends broke his neck, drunk driving. Two other vehicles were involved. They were taken away in an ambulance. I happened to know the cops. They dropped me off at the local gas station. Had they not have done that, maybe I would have got here sooner. Maybe I would have struggled. You know, this is my first attempt at recovery. My first attempt at recovery. Relapse is not a requirement if this is your first attempt at recovery. And if you've been coming in and out, and you're not quite sure what anybody's talking about, and you're still feeling restless, irritable, and discontent sober, there's work to do. There's work to do. That's what I was told. This is a program of action, not a program of inaction. You know, I'm a benefactor of God-inspired sponsorship. God-inspired sponsorship. My sponsors taught me to be God-reliant, not people-reliant. If I'm people-reliant, I'm going to get disappointed. I can only give back what I was given. So what do I do with the girls I sponsor? I show them what was showed to me, and I tell them they need to become God-reliant. If they call me and they got this stuff going on, the first thing I say is, did you talk to God? If they say no, click. I don't have all the answers here. I'm just another bozo on the bus, just like you. Just trying to do the next right thing, that's all. But I go to God for direction. I sit in prayer meditation. I work the 11th step. I work 10, 11, and 12, which are the maintenance steps around here. 10, 11, and 12, maintenance steps. I'm always looking at me, because if there's something bothering me about you, it's definitely about me. There's something I'm seeing in you that I don't like, because it's something in me. I know that today. You know? I made that list of my amends, and then I became willing to make amends to them all. And I made that list, and I made those calls, and some people didn't want anything to do with it. They weren't ready. My sponsor used to say to me, it's not in your time. It's not in your time. Time. Things I must earn. Hated that. I remember clearing up when I was in detox, and I was at a holding facility, and I was like, all right, you know, this is awesome, you know. They're going to love me. I call and they go, click. You know, they weren't ready. They definitely weren't ready, but I was. So my sponsor told me that if I pushed my will, that would be my will and that would be selfish. So I talk a lot about my God box. I heard a woman at a podium speaking one night, and it was just about when I was at the third step. And she was talking about this God box. And she said what she did is she took a shoe box and she decorated it. And she called it her God box. And anytime she had a problem or an issue or something that she just couldn't deal with or handle, it was an act of surrender by writing it on a piece of paper or whatever it may be and throwing it into the God box. And once it got into the God box, it was out of her hands. So it was almost like a practice on this whole surrender thing, which I had no idea or concept or inkling as to what that meant. Surrender to what? What's God's will? I don't know what God's will is. How am I going to surrender to that? You know, I had so many questions. Up here, intellectually, it didn't make sense. It didn't make sense to me. But that God box helped. And I would write letters to my kids, and I would write letters to my parents, and I would write letters to my ex-husband, and I would write letters to people that didn't want to see me yet or talk to me yet, and I would put it into the God box. And then I would leave it there. And the more that I did it, because it's about practicing it around here, the more I did it, the more that I would be able to let it go. And then it was kind of like, all right, God, you got this one, I'm set. You know what I mean? I don't have to worry about it. You know what I mean? Literally, it's yours. It's not mine. And I'm not taking it back, I'd say, some days, because I want to go back in that box. Because for me, I'm an alcoholic. I love to sit in self-pity. I love to sit there. It feels good. You know what those people did to me? You know, look at me. I'm sober. They still don't want anything to do with me. What's wrong with them? You know, God-inspired sponsorship. And, because she tell me the truth. See, I have a truth teller as a sponsor. She doesn't co-sign my stuff. She didn't tell me it's going to be all right. She don't tell me if my ass falls off, stick it in a wheelbarrow, and bring it to a meeting. She doesn't tell me that. She doesn't. She tells me the truth. And some days, I don't want to hear the truth. I don't want to hear the truth. One of the things she said to me is, the truth will set you free, but first it will ruin your day. And some other people's day, too. But, so I would stick everything in this God box, and I'm trying to do this act of surrender, and then as the relationship started, you know, coming back to my life, I would go back to that God box, and I would take out anything that was in there that had to do with that person. Because I had pitches, I had old Mother's Day, you know, cards, I had kindergarten pitches, you know, oh, poor me, you know, I'd throw it in the box. And eventually it all got down, you know, it got down. And there was only one relationship left in that box. It was only one. And it was my daughter, Alicia. And She was real angry. She was the one who got hurt the most. She's the one who suffered the most. She's probably the one who at the time was the closest to me, who loved me the most, and she wasn't ready to let me off the hook. She wasn't ready. She wanted me to suffer. And my sponsor would say to me, you can't push your will. Because I wanted to call. I wanted to go there. I wanted to, like, beg her. You know what I mean? I'll, like, do anything. I'll do anything. I was told, you can't do it. You can't do it. So for 3.5 years around here, I walked around with that hole that she belonged in. But I didn't have to drink and drug over it. I didn't have to drink and drug over it. And guess what? When the time was right, that reconciliation just came just a few short weeks ago. It came. Now we're in the process of recreating that relationship. And people that have heard me speak have heard me cry, have heard me say, you know what I mean? I've talked about it because that's what I'm told to do. I'm told to talk about it. My oldest daughter got married down in Florida. I was invited. I was invited. I used to be, here she comes, hide the silverware. Put the china away. She's coming. No, I was invited. I was a part of. I was there. I was available. That's because of Alcoholics Anonymous, God, and the 12 steps. That's the only reason why I stand here tonight. It talks about the hopeless variety alcoholic in the big book. And hopeless variety. That's what I am. I'm a hopeless variety. And it tells me that for the hopeless variety alcoholic, a spiritual experience is a must. You hear about suggestions around here. There's suggestions. You don't have to do anything you don't want to do. But there's a lot of musts in there. There's a lot of musts in there. There's 417 references in the first 164 pages of God. Not just G-O-D God, because it can be anything that you want it to be. I don't really. We have no monopoly, it tells us. I have a friend who says, you got to put God in a guy like me, or I'm never going to make it. How do I get to God? Through the 12 steps. How do I stay close to God? Through the 12 steps. Perform His work well, stay close to Him, and go out and help His other kids. That has been the sole basis of my sobriety. I was 5 months sober when I finished those 12 steps in the big book one-on-one. And I was told now I had to go give it away. I said, give it away? Who would want anything I have? I'm 5 months sober. And they said, you know of a spiritual experience. You know of clearing away the wreckage of your past. Now go out and find someone. So I was 6 months sober and sat down with my first woman at a kitchen table and started bringing her through the big book. And not all the women that I've sat down with have stayed sober. But I have. I have. I have 100% success rate because I'm still sober. And the ones that have finished it and completed it are happy, joyous, and free. I don't need anybody to tell me whether this works or not. It's that knownness that settles down within me as I watch what happens to the people that work this program and the ones that think they can do it the softer, easier way. They don't make it. They're not here. But the ones that do are. There's a couple of things that I'd like to point out. In A Vision for You, it talks about, you know, that's what my sponsor did for me. He painted a picture, you know, said to me, what if I told you that you could be respected and useful? What if you were able to give love and receive love? What if you could be a trustworthy employee? Would you go to any lengths to get that? I said, of course I would. I went to any lengths to get what I wanted out there. Why wouldn't I put that same effort into my sobriety today? Even if I put half of what I put in out there to get that, I'd be okay. I talked about in A Vision for You, it says, it's the fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous. Life will mean something at last. The most satisfactory years of your life's existence lie ahead. Thus we find the fellowship, and so will you. That's what this is, the fellowship. We're at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous at 50th anniversary for one of the groups, This is where we're going to find lifelong friends, it tells us. Near you, alcoholics are dying helplessly, like people in sinking ships. There'll be highs and lows and rich and poor. These are future fellows of Alcoholics Anonymous. Among them, you will make lifelong friends. You will be bound to them with new and wonderful ties, for you will escape disaster together, and you will commence shoulder to shoulder on your common journey. They will know what it means to give, then you will know what it means to give of yourself that others may survive and rediscover life. What an amazing promise. What an amazing promise. When I first started reading this, that wasn't happening in my life yet. I didn't see it as a promise. Everyone talks about the 9-step promises. You hear them read them at meetings all the time. There is promises after promises after promises in this book. And every time I pick it up, I see another one. Because I'm continuing to grow. I'm remaining teachable today. I don't sit down with the women. I sit down and go, I know what's going on, and I know it all. So just sit down, shut up, take the cotton out of your mouth, and put it in your ears, or the other way you are, whatever. No. It's about me learning from you, and you're learning from me, and God is the director. God's the director. I take no credit for anything. I don't get anyone drunk, and I don't get anyone sober. All I do is show up, available, with a big book and a highlighter in hand, and miracles happen. Something happens when this book opens up, and two hearts start sharing. There's something that happens, and I don't know what it is. I'm unqualified. I've been here 3.5 years. The only thing I can give back is what I've learned here of myself. What was handed down to me from my sponsors, in my own experience. The darkest, most terrible times in my entire life have now turned into my greatest asset. How's that happen? Nothing I did. And if I got what I deserved, I certainly wouldn't be standing here tonight. That was another lesson. Forgiveness. You know, forgiveness is probably, I believe, the greatest act of love. Forgiveness is love in action. That was hard for me, because I had a lot of outside influences that were responsible for why I ended up where I ended up. I used to plot demise. I always talk about that icicle that hangs on the side of my house. It was this big, huge, long icicle, and if I just positioned him just right, knocked that thing off, boom, he'd be done. And then there was always the pillow over the face at night. You know, I mean, there was a lot of crouching brainstorming going on. You know? Forgiveness. And then I realized that forgiveness doesn't mean what you did was okay. It simply means that I am no longer willing to carry around pain in response to your actions. Because if I'm hating on you and I'm unforgiving you, who's suffering? I'm suffering. I don't have room for unforgiveness today. I don't have room for all that hatred and bitterness and all that stuff that goes along with it. There's not enough room. I like being filled with the good stuff. And whatever I'm putting in is what's going to come out. If I'm full of negativity and I'm full of judgments on people and you know, that's what's coming out. You know? If I'm not growing, if my message isn't changing, then I'm not doing anything. And they talk about, you know, I used to talk all the time about, you know, these gardens and stuff, you know, and, you know, and I was a little bit deeper when I first got here, you know, but, you know, talking about, like, these gardens and stuff here on Earth, you know, and they talked about, you know, that a garden doesn't grow without water. And all I did was cry when I first got here. All I did was cry. So all I could do was cry and cry and cry. I've missed my children. I'm a mother with 4 children. I missed my children. I couldn't imagine that I could have taken it to that extreme where they weren't in my life anymore. There was pain. There was pain. There's still pain. I don't look at pain the same way. But They talk about stagnant water stinking, you know? Stagnant water. You know, like that green foam that sits on like a pond, you know what I mean? Like, that's what happens. If things aren't flowing in and flowing out, if I'm not continually taking stuff in that I'm trying to find out about what makes me tick, then that's all the stuff that's going to come out. I have a friend who talks about, it's like walking around with a glass of water in your hand, and it's a full glass of water. And every time you bump into someone, you're spilling water all over them. Those are all your character defects. Those are spilling out over everyone that's around you. And for the alcoholic, they think they're not affecting anyone but themselves. They don't think that they're hurting anyone. I didn't think I was hurting anyone. I thought it was just hurting me, and for as much as that mattered, it didn't matter. You know, I didn't care. You know, one of my other models I used to say is, when you're green, you grow, and when you're ripe, you rot. I want to stay green today. I want to keep growing. I want to keep learning. I want to remain teachable. I want to continue to enjoy the friendships and the relationships that I'm building here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have people around me that are also working the 12 steps to the best of their ability. We don't get it done right. I don't get it done perfectly. I like to use them as just guardrails in the road of life. And the longer I stay and the more that I find out about me, the more I'm able to go out and help another alcoholic. And to watch others, like, there's nothing out there. There was no drink or drug or anything that I've ever come across that gives me the feelings when I see the lights come off in someone else's eyes. And then they start to go out and start to give it to somebody else. It's amazing. It works when nothing else will. It really does work. I just want to end with page 164 in the big book. Thank you so much for letting me share tonight. I really appreciate it. These are the last two paragraphs on page 164 of the big book. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But you obviously can't transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.